Welcome to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. Episode 14, Blue Tongue. The scentscape drew Blue Tongue from sleep like nectar draws the bee, painting the world with colours of sap and pollen, grounding him in the deep aromas of clay and loam and silt. He didn't need to open his eyes to know where he was. He smelled the willows of Bluebank, shivering with new leaves, the sharpness of fresh nettles pushing through the clagging soil that clung to his nose like water to the fish. He smelled pickerel weed nearby, its scent dusted with iris and the fetid undertones of figwort. From further away slipped the perfumes of comfrey and hemlock, bringing the darker tones of oak and beech from the deep bloodwood in the distance, and then, standing there beside him, Fox. He woke with a start, turning his blood mark to the shadow that loomed up between him and the open sky. A heartbeat later and he recognized its shape. Yellowbelly, the applewood fox with golden fur haloed around its neck and underside.
"She wants you,"
it signed, amused with itself at having startled him. Blue Tongue heaved himself out of the dent of earth and scampered into the light, shaking the soil from his fur and the days of sleep from his head. There'd been tunnels in his dream. He'd been racing after Snowtip somewhere beneath the roots of the tree wall, the old Martin's breath just a few heartbeats ahead of him, but no matter how fast Blue Tongue had run, he could not catch up. He had scurried along the rootwork, chirping for the master Green Mason to slow down, but the scent of the old Martin grew fainter until it was days away. Just a lingering ghost on the tunnel's walls. Blue Tongue had felt his way through those arteries of earth until the tangle of unwoven roots pulling at his fur closed in, blocking the tunnel entirely. Somewhere beyond was Snowtip, his scent strong again, caught on the mass of roots like burrs on fur. Blue Tongue called desperately for his master, biting at the roots, clawing at the tunnel walls, but the darkness gave him nothing save the cold weight of earth. The waking world had drawn him above ground again. The dream could be left buried, like the core of bloodfruit, harmless and barren, for now. The omen had slept beneath the willows that lined the river path, curled within the thick yellow roots. The trees around the river were much younger than the ancient bloodwood that surrounded them. Before the great bear had driven them from the forest's waterways, the river folk had stripped every oak of its blood mark within 50 heartbeats of the riverbank. Few of the slow-growing giants survived the decades of vandalism, and those that did were weak and sickly. Now the rivers were lined with the hasty stems of aspen and weeping willow, marked with rich carmine blood marks that stretched from root to twig, strong enough to bring forth a small crop of bloodfruit every year for the few creatures who had begun to repopulate the river's edge. Blue Tongue had been travelling with the applewood foxes a full day along the river, scouring the waterside for evidence of the rumours he had shared with them following the disappearance of Snowtip. The headmarked fox had stopped at every bloodmarked tree along the way, insisting the Green Mason inspect them for signs of damage. Any broken blood mark could be evidence of the river folk's return, she reasoned, but so far none had been found. The trees along the river's edge remained just as healthy as they should be, their marks strong and virile against the lighter bark. The Green Mason felt the patience of the fox guard waning. He had brought them here along this route back to the Citadel on the basis of rumour, one which he himself was unsure of. There had been whisperings of river folk for a half moon or more, but Blue Tongue had barely given them any thought. And even when he and Snowtip had visited the Citadel a few days before, they had taken the Rippledown scent path, barely coming close to the river. It was only because Snowtip had taken the path and not returned that the rumours had floated back to him, spewing out in a torrent of half-considered fears as the headmark of Applewood had questioned him. And then it was too late. The headmark fox had invited him to join them, and how could he say no to someone like that? He didn't have a choice. He can't say no to a headmarked animal. Blue Tongue just wanted to see Snowtip again. He wanted him to come home. He was just worried. But he had no proof the river folk had returned. And the further they travelled, the less likely it seemed they would find any. The headmarked of Applewood didn't seem to mind. If anything, she was enjoying herself. She kept him close by, asking him about the plants they passed, and getting him to recite the psalms he knew in connection with them. In truth, his knowledge of Riversong was sketchy at best, nothing compared to Snowtip. The fox, however, was insistent, and treated every scrap of lore with a reverence Blue Tongue did not expect to find within a headmark creature. Headmark creatures like this didn't learn psalms, but this strange fox drank them in like no other. Even the green masons of the tree wall were only willing to learn the minimum steps required to complete their tasks to a satisfactory standard, and never showed any desire to learn alternatives except those that might save them time in the root pit, or would save a little effort on the high branches that leaned out over the forest's boundary wall. They never showed the same level of attention as this fox with her twisted toes and misshapen pads. She watched every sign word, every step, dancing them back with uncanny accuracy, the ugliness of her paws lost in the grace of her movements. The fox guard were another matter. All they wanted to do was return to the hubbub of the Citadel and the shelter of the Applewood Den, and the search for Snowtip was little more than a distraction that slowed them down. The more they grew impatient with Blue Tongue, the more he felt his own frustrations with them growing. They didn't seem to care at all. They had no time for him or his silly little search. They acted as if they all shared Harfoot's status. He could see the marks on their rumps, no higher than his. And yet they acted as though they were from a different bloodwood entirely, which, granted, they were, but that was no reason to treat him or his concern about Snowtip with such callousness. The way Yellowbelly had woken him only made him feel worse.
"Am I even going the right way?"
he signed, skipping backwards as the fox bore down on him. It was unsettling to have the creature creep behind him like that, quiet as the morning breeze. If the thing wanted to take him to Harfoot, then it could have at least led the way. Instead, it stalked behind him, slipping in and out of the mid-morning shadows and leaving him to go in the direction he supposed she had probably gone. The gold-haired fox snorted.
"I could carry you in my mouth if you wished,"
it signed, giving the ermine a glimpse of its teeth.
"Fine,"
signed Blue Tongue, unfurling his claws without a heartbeat's hesitation.
"Bring your eyes just a little closer and I'll hop right in."
The fox hesitated. An ermine was unlikely to survive an outright fight, but the fox wouldn't escape the scrap without losing an eye.
"Or you could just lead the way,"
signed Blue Tongue, gesturing for the fox to continue on along the riverbank.
"After all, you're the one who's supposed to be taking me there."
"Filthy mud rat," signed the fox. "You should show some respect for your betters."
"We're of the same rank. I can see the mark on your backside."
"I am a member of the Headmark Guard. I serve the High Family of Applewood."
"And my mark is that of the King," retorted Blue Tongue. "The one your Lord of Applewood bowed down to a few days ago. If anything, I outrank you."
The fox lowered its head, rumbling with anger. Snowtip had been here, he would have stepped in by now. Snowtip were here, he'd have found a way to defuse the situation before it ever got to this point. Snowtip were here, Blue Tongue wouldn't even be making this journey. But Blue Tongue wanted this fight. He had no chance of winning, but something inside him wanted it. The fox lowered itself into a pounced position, It was too late to back out. The ermine hissed viciously. There was a sudden growl from behind him. Another fox. It sneaked up behind the ermine while his attention was on the gold one. Of course, they worked together. They would fight together as well. He cursed himself for his own stupidity. He'd been with them a day, and here he was about to get ripped apart in a fight over blood marks. There was a sudden rush, and the air above him was full of fur. He braced himself, but the creature above him never seemed to land. A moment later, and the gold fox was rolling backwards, the new creature rolling with him. It was the grey-headed fox named Rockhart, hark to the headmarked of Applewood. She twisted on her feet and leapt up again before the gold-haired fox could recover, pinning the thing by the scruff of the neck. She shook the terrified fox once and then let its head drop to the floor. The gold-haired fox whimpered in the mud, stunned. Blue Tongue stood frozen as the hart turned to him. "You're tempting fate, little one," she sighed. "Watch your sign words, or I might not be here next time to save you. Are you hurt?" Blue Tongue thawed his limbs back into life and showed Rockhart he was unharmed. "Good," she sighed. "Come. The headmarked has found something she wants you to see." The gold-haired fox finally staggered to its feet, dazed and unsteady and pawing at the streak of blood smeared across its jowl. Blue Tongue didn't wait for it to recover. He skittered after Rockhart, already disappearing around the riverbank. The headmarked fox of Applewood lay among a patch of sedge, beside a willow at the water's edge, staring intently at the tree's jagged trunk. She offered Blue Tongue and the grey-headed fox a sign of greeting. "What do you make of this?" The willow hung over the river, its branches a good 5 or 6 heartbeats across the water, with the tips of its leaves trailing in the flow. To all outward appearances, it seemed healthy enough. Its blood mark was strong, a good 6 or 7 paws across, and there was a good crop of blood fruit on the branches above. But the smell of its sap was too strong. It should have been locked away behind the bark, but instead it smelled like broken bloodroot. Snowtip always had a nose for that smell. It meant that someone in the root pit had made a mistake. A root would have been bent beyond breaking point or scratched to bleeding with some over-eager claw. Blue Tongue had lost count of the number of times the old marten had berated him for making such a mistake. He crept closer to the trunk. There was an unnatural crack and the rough surface a little above head height. The bark was loose, as though it had been peeled away and clumsily reset.
"This is from Nighttail Sorrow," he signed, picking at the wound.
"What's that?" asked Harford.
"It's a blackwood binding sum. It's used to heal damaged blood marks."
He smelled the edges of the wound, tracing its progress up the trunk. It was only small. Only a few paws across, barely enough for the tree to notice. When the river folk attacked the trees, they tore the blood marks from them in their entirety, leaving weeping wounds in the trunks. This tree by the riverside, however, the blood fruit still grew fresh and pungent, and there was little trace of stress in its scent. The ermine lifted a claw to the tear. The bark around the edges had not been properly sealed. A thick amber of brittle red sap had lifted the coarse sheet of periderm from the phloem beneath. The sticky residue of herbs that had been used to stick one to the other had been shattered like ice on a lake by the flecks of the willow's trunk. Harford barked lightly for his attention.
"How long until we reach the citadel?"
Blue Tongue released the flap of bark.
"Sunset, if we leave now. Hold on."
He hopped as close as he dared to the river and began gathering mouthfuls of reed mace and great willow herb from among the grasses that grew there.
"What are you doing?"
sighed Rockhart.
"The blood mark,"
sighed Blue Tongue.
"The binding must be changed."
The ermine came back to the willow, chewing the herbs as he went. He pulled back the bark and scraped the underside clean of whatever substance had been applied before. Harford watched, curious, as he transferred the sticky mash from his mouth onto a young butterbur leaf. Once he'd arranged it, he took his own foreleg in his mouth and bit down hard.
"What's it doing?"
sighed Rockhart. Blue Tongue held his leg over the mixture and allowed the blood to drip onto the herb mash.
"It's the bloodbind sum,"
sighed Harford, watching closely.
"What kind of a creature draws its own blood?"
sighed Rockhart, huffing. This one has a death wish. I've already caught him fighting with Yellowbelly today. The ermine mixed the mess into a thick batter and applied it to the edges of the wound, sealing the bark to the phloem beneath.
This was not Snowtit's work, he sighed.
Why do you think that?
Nighttail sorrow doesn't bind in warm weather, sighed the little greenmason. It makes no sense to use it unless there's a frost. Even then the blood bind works just as well, as long as there isn't snow.
We have nothing like it in Applewood, sighed the headmarked fox. Who else apart from your master would know it?
It's a Blackwood psalm, sighed the ermine. You'd have to travel to one of the northern bloodwoods to learn it.
It is the river folk, then, sighed Harford. They travel. Maybe they learned it in Blackwood and used it here.
It's not river folk, sighed Rockhart. The river folk rip the marks right out of the trunks and leave the trees to die. If they returned, they'd be killing the trees, not healing them.
Rockhart hesitated.
I think we should consider the possibility that these rumours about river folk are in fact just rumours. The Great Bear cleared the rivers years ago.
Your father helped him in that. And it worked. There haven't been river folk in Highwood for years. So what is this, then? There's a tree with a damaged blood marker. If that's not river folk, then who is it?
My lord, sighed Rockhart carefully, the low creatures don't care for their marks as we do. They allow them to become torn or thin, and leave it until the last moment to have them renewed. Sometimes they leave it too late. In such cases, the consequences of their neglect becomes more pressing.
So they begin attacking blood marks. What good would it do to bring the law of the bloodwood down upon their head? It's a crime. What could they possibly want to achieve by committing such blasphemy? Are they fools in this bloodwood?
They want the sap,
sighed Blue Tongue, before he could stop himself. The high-marked fox cocked her head to one side, confused. Why would they want the sap? The ermine shifted uncomfortably, cursing himself and unsure how to explain.
To make a blood mark,
signed Rockhart, stepping in with cautious sign words.
I've come across it before in Applewood. Several times, actually, though I'm ashamed to admit it.
The sap can be mixed with clay from the river. It forms a sort of temporary blood mark, not a real one. It doesn't smell the same, and it'll only last a few days, but it looks close enough to the real thing for a time. And they would rather do this than go to my father.
They may not last long enough to reach your father without one,
sighed the grey-headed fox.
The damage here may simply be because some low-marked creature wanted to give itself a few more days to live. This is not going to be river folk. It may have been the missing greenmason, for all we know.
Blue Tongue snarled at the suggestion.
Snowtip would not do this, he sighed. It's a crime. His blood mark is strong.
Maybe he fell into the river, sighed Rockhart.
No.
I am sure your master would never harm a bloodmark tree, sighed Harford.
Every bloodwood has its share of desperate creatures, sighed the grey-headed fox.
Blue Tongue thought of Ashford. The squirrel's bloodmark had been hanging off when he'd gone to her for the ginger. The headmarked fox was thinking. This binding does seem an unusual choice for a Highwood creature, she sighed. She sniffed at the wound as if searching for something and then turned to her foxguard. Blue Tongue felt them share a picture of a cold sky seen through dimly lit deciduous leaves. The grey-headed fox seemed to understand.
Blackwood, she sighed.
Harford stood back from the tree. The bloodwood of the Great Bear's mate was one of the last to send a representative to take the king's mark, she sighed. If an animal from Blackwood lost its mark, it would not know the Highwood psalms. They would have to use what they already knew. There were still some shards of dark amber glittering in the dark soil beneath the willow. Blue Tongue set about burying them, keeping half his attention on the foxes.
We should be careful who we tell about this, sighed Rockhart. My lord, I know you wanted to speak on behalf of the forest's hindmarked, and that was good. That was when we thought there were river folk picking them off. This does not seem to be what happened. We have found no evidence of river folk. The willow is strong. The greenmason here has repaired the damage done by whoever it was. It is one thing to go to the king to report the re-emergence of an old enemy, but it is something else to bother him with the misfortunes of some hindermarked animal. Bringing this issue to the king would only cause trouble for the creature and ourselves.
You think reporting this would damage our relationship with Blackwood?
I think peace does not require every crime to be brought into the light,
signed the grey-headed fox. A blush of wind ruffled the water, bringing the scent of crocus from the far bank. Arthur sunk back into the sedge by the river's edge.
You are disappointed,
signed the grey-headed fox. Harford shook the midges from her snout and looked over the water.
I thought I had a purpose here for a moment, Rockhart, she sighed. Something that meant my father was right to choose me above my brother to stay and represent our bloodwood, I know. I don't know. I thought I might be able to do something to help these creatures. I didn't expect the best I could offer would be to keep their secrets.
Blue Tongue smoothed down the earth and gave it a little of his water. He had not yet drunk anything since waking up, and so what he gave here would leave a heavy dose of his scent beside the wounded blood mark, but there was little he could do about that now. The soil wouldn't take the amber if it wasn't made wet.
There is one other thing,
the grey-headed fox signed, moving itself between Blue Tongue and the head-marked fox. From this angle, the ermine could no longer see the fox's signs clearly. It was wanting to keep something from him, to share an idea with Harford alone. The ermine fussed at the earth a little more, though it no longer really needed his attention. Below the surface, he could already smell shallow soil worms edging into the freshly turned earth. A solitary green-backed dung beetle scuttled the edges of the wet ground, searching for any other gifts the ermine might have left it. No pictures spilled over towards Blue Tongue from the foxes this time. Whatever they were sharing was tight between the two of them. But the Green Mason still caught a flash of something reflected in the head-marked fox's eyes. Whatever the grey fox was sharing upset her. And whatever had upset her was something it had shared about Blue Tongue. The green beetle continued its path, leaving the Green Mason's damp earth behind in search of some other offering. The foxes were sharing something about him. Something the grey-headed fox didn't want him to know.
We cannot have anyone think we are accusing Blackwood of anything without evidence,
signed Rockhart, so softly that Blue Tongue could barely see her paws move.
Our alliance is fragile like a new shoot. Even a rumour could break it before it has a chance to flower.
He will keep our confidence, signed the head-marked one.
And if he doesn't?
He will, signed Harford. Besides, I will not resort to hiding skins on my first full day in Highwood without my father. A shiver passed over Blue Tongue. They thought he would tell others about what they had found. And now, to keep it a secret, they were deciding whether or not to kill him.
I need to go a little way into the wood,
signed the ermine, panicking.
There are some herbs I need for the tree. I won't be long.
Stay here,
signed Rockhart.
A few heartbeats and I'll be back,
signed Blue Tongue, already skipping toward the tree line. He hopped a fallen branch, darted beneath another, heading towards the trees that stretched into the densely knit canopy of the deep forest. There was a bark from the river, and a flurry of gold fur filled his path. Yellow belly, teeth exposed and primed to pounce again.
Back to the river, mudrat,
he snarled as two more applewood foxes appeared from the shadows. Harford was rushing towards them, barking for attention.
Blue Tongue, she sighed. Don't run, please.
The ermine twisted on the spot.
He should have listened to Snowtip that time at the tree wall. These creatures were not to be trusted.
Please,
signed Harford.
Yellow belly, stand down.
He was trying to run, signed Rockhart, joining them.
He was scared, sighed the head-marked fox with a snap of her jaws. The discord between the head-marked and heart-marked of applewood distracted Yellowbelly for just a heartbeat. Blue Tongue didn't
hesitate. He leapt at the gold-furred fox, claws outstretched, aiming for the eyes. He caught the creature just below the left socket, and the fox wheeled away, whimpering. Its two companions sprang forward, but Blue Tongue was already sprinting into the undergrowth. He quickly shifted the direction he was running. One of the two bodies flew over him. The other misjudged its launch and landed short. He didn't stop to watch them get up. He ran to the forest's edge and ploughed into a patch of sweet violet, filling the air behind him with their pungent fumes. It would give him some cover, not much, but enough to bind their senses for the rest of the morning. Even so, he could not outrun them on the forest floor. He needed to climb. There was a holly to his right. He twisted sideways and shot up the trunk. His sudden turn evaded a lunge from the first fox, but the second leapt and knocked the ermine from the tree, sending him plummeting to the floor. The two creatures scrambled in the dirt, Blue Tongue swiping wildly, somehow managing to land a claw in the thing's lower lip, splitting it to the bone. The creature yelped and rolled away. Blue Tongue sprang back to the tree and launched himself up the trunk, snaking through the branches until the leaves began to lose their thorns. He settled towards the top of the tree. The two foxes could not follow him into the canopy. They stalked around the trunk, barking their anger into the echoing forest. A heartbeat or two later, and Yellowbelly appeared around the tree line, eyes bleeding, followed by Harfoot and the other appled foxes. "Stop this," commanded Harfoot. The foxes around the trunk of the holly eased back, though their snarls remained. The one with the split lip was drooling blood. Harfoot signaled for one of the others to find wet moss to bind it. "I thought you wanted to avoid a scandal, not start one," she signed to Rockhart, full of bile. "We can't let it go now," signed the grey-headed fox. "He was helping us," signed Harford. "He was never a threat." "They are all a threat," signed Yellowbelly. "Your brother knew that." The headmarked fox bristled. "My brother is not in Highwood," she signed coolly. "But I am, and until I decide otherwise, we will..." She was cut off by a yelp from the deep forest. A voice stopped mid-cry. Every fox turned their ear towards the sound, recognizing its source as one of their own. Rockhart gave a sharp bark, and the fox guards took up new positions around the headmarked vixen. Another command from him, and two sprinted into the thicket of trees, leaving Rockhart, Yellowbelly, and the fox with the split lip to guard Harford. The foxes made no further signs with each other, facing out into the surrounding forest. Blue Tongue saw they were close enough that images slipped between them as one mind, sharing the scentscape and anything else they sensed in the deep wood and no longer fixed on him. He took the chance to slide up to the branch above and creep along its length to where a hornbeam hung low enough for him to make the leap to the larger tree. There was a quivering of twigs as he landed, and Yellowbelly looked up, spotting him on the new branch. Blue Tongue sent him a small sign of greeting, but the fox didn't get a chance to respond. He was bowled over by a wave of grey-black shapes. Rockhart and the fox with the split lip were thrown back by a flurry of snarls and fur. Blue Tongue dashed to the trunk of the hornbeam, out along another branch, and climbed up into the outstretched arms of a blood-marked oak. He slid up two more branches and hid himself against the upper side of the thick limb, peering over its rim to see the chaos below. A group of 12 or more wolves stood around the base of the holly. Yellowbelly was pinned by the neck by a shaggy grey beast with two vivid white stripes running from its head down its neck and then down to its white forepaws. The fox with the split lip lay dead, its head bent at an unnatural angle beneath its body and its coat littered with last season's holly leaves from where it had rolled in the dirt. Rockhart was at the headmark's side, hopping from side to side to prevent the circle of wolves from closing in any further against Harford. She was limping badly, but she was not pinned. Two of the wolves whined at the edges of the pack, nursing the injuries the heart-marked fox had inflicted upon them. One of them had tears down her leg where the flesh had been stripped from the bone. She wouldn't last long with that sort of damage. At the centre of them stood Harford, eyes wide in terror. Blue Tongue looked about his hiding place high up in the oak. There was a clear route across a dozen or so interlinked trees away into the deep forest, but was there any reason to leave now? The wolves below all carried the mark of the three-horned stag, the hoofprint stamped on their rumps and sides, marking them out as creatures of Highwood, the same as Blue Tongue himself. They'd come to rescue him, hadn't they?
but the scent of death was already reaching him from the fox with the split lip and the broken neck. He marvelled at how quickly the stink had developed. The thing's skin was unbroken, but death stinks in the mind as much as the nose. It was a premonition of maggots. It was a bloating of the skin and the promise of worms. Blue Tongue didn't want to get any closer. A rumbling growl from the forest floor brought his attention back to the living animals below. One of the larger wolves was signing with Harford.
"If we had warned you, you would have run,"
it was signing. "But why would we have run?" sighed Harford, shivering and struggling to control her bitten limbs.
"You are a traitor,"
continued the wolf, its fur flecked with red amongst the grey. The beast was panting heavily, its breath visible in the air despite the mildness of the day. "We're the guests of the king," sighed Harford. "I wear his mark on my forehead, above that of my own father. I'm no traitor."
"Your actions say otherwise."
"What actions are those?" The wolf stepped closer. Rockhart bared down as best as she could on her injured foreleg and sighed.
"Keep your distance, wolf, or I'll rip that shaggy throat of yours from your neck."
The wolf stopped, considered the fox girl. From what Blue Tongue could see, the wolf could easily have killed the injured fox, and yet it retreated a step or two.
"I respect what you have achieved here today, Grey One," it warned. "Four foxes against a pack, and you got the best of two of my favourite wolves, with the loss of only one of your own. If we exclude the one we caught in the forest with his head in the wet moss patch. But do not deceive yourself. You have won nothing here today. There is no chance of survival unless you submit. And do not think we did not notice the two you sent out into the shadows before we arrived. If you're expecting them to come to your aid from the rear, then I'm afraid you have been let down. But fear not, we will track them down as well, just as we tracked you down."
"There was no need to track us down," interrupted Harford. "We were not trying to hide."
"I'm sure you were just skirting the river just for fun," sighed the wolf, "and not trying to cover up your tracks."
"I'm the headmark of Applewood. Why would I have any need to cover my tracks?"
"Why would you indeed?
You wish me to make guesses?"
"You were seen with the king's daughter 2 nights ago,
sighed the wolf. "Dewdrop, yes, we went to the tree wall."
"She hasn't been seen since."
Harford made no reply. Rockhart snorted dismissively.
"If you can't keep track of your own, then that's your problem."
"We found where you visited the wall," continued the wolf. "We spoke to the Green Masons you met there."
"Then you know we had nothing to do with her disappearance."
"We know she was seen signing with one of your foxes, and we have traced her scent to where we found evidence of a hunt and a scentscape stinking of sweat and fear. Add that to your Bloodwood's reputation for treachery, and I think we have a fairly good idea of what happened."
Rockhart let out a growl so sharp it stung like thorns.
"You know our scent now," sighed Harford. "Does it match anything you found?"
"You obviously used the river to cover your scent."
"Does it smell like any of us have been swimming in the river?"
"What about the two you sent into the wood?"
"You'll find no evidence of wrongdoing with them either."
The wolf snarled its annoyance.
"Then the culprit probably escaped with your father and brother yesterday."
"And how would you go about proving that? Just because you can imagine something does not mean it is true."
"Enough with this," snarled the wolf. "Save your words for the king. You cannot slip your way out of this thicket to my headmarked lord. You will come with us now, and, mark my sign words, you will face the king's justice for what you have done."
There was a sudden cry of pain from the wolf holding down Yellowbelly. Somehow the gold-haired fox had managed to slip out of its grasp and onto its back, biting at the head and tearing at the skin there. One of the ears came away in a bloody mess, and the thing howled in pain, rolling onto its back and crushing the fox beneath it. Two of the other wolves leapt to their sister's defence, and a heartbeat later, the golden fox was dead, his throat torn clear away, his head hanging limp as they wrenched it from his body. Rockhart never left Harford's side for a moment. The red-flecked wolf turned its attention slowly back to the head-marked fox and her last remaining guard.
"At this rate," it signed,
You will be the only fox left to see the king, my lord. So what say you, Grey One? You want to make my job a little easier for me by offering your life as well?
Rockhart didn't move. Only the rumble of her growl continued. She wasn't going to back down, Blue Tongue realized. The grey-headed fox would defend Harford until death tore her from her side.
We will come with you, sighed Harford, stepping out in front of a guard. There will be no more fighting from any of us.
Rockhart whimpered in protest. Harford quelled it with a sharp stomp of her mangled foot.
We will see the king, she sighed. He will understand that we have done nothing wrong.
She turned back to the wolf.
And maybe then we can turn our attention to finding Dewdrop. After all, shouldn't that be our main concern?
The wolf snorted.
I'm sure you'll give us a good idea of where to start,
it sighed. It shared a picture of instruction with its brethren, and the headmarked vixen and her guard were led away, back towards the river path and out of Blue Tongue's sight. The red-flecked fox let out a harsh whinny, and a squadron of pine martens appeared out of the trees, emerging from their hiding places like louse from rotten wood. None of them looked remotely like Snowtip, but Blue Tongue still found his heart searching their shapes, hoping for a flash of white in their tails. There was none. The ermine scanned the branches around him for more of them, but he was alone in the oak tree. Somehow, he had escaped their notice.
The wolf signalled to one of the martens.
Search the holly tree, it sighed. The foxes were hunting something. We know there was a Highwood Green Mason travelling with them, but I can't smell the hogs behind over that damn sweet violet. But whatever they were hunting, I want to know. Find the thing and bring it to me. I have some questions for the little traitor.
Three martens shot up the holly trunk and into the nest of dark leaves, but Blue Tongue was already gone, escaping across the canopy and heading, tree by tree, deeper into the forest. Away from the river. Away from the foxes. Away from the wolves. The wolves knew him from the tree wall. They would have creatures waiting for him there. He couldn't go back. He couldn't go back. He ran, fixing his mind on one task. He had to find Snowtip. Whatever had happened at the riverbank, Snowtip was still somewhere out there, and Snowtip would know what to do. The old Green Mason always knew what to do. All Blue Tongue had to do was find him. You've been listening to Kingdom, a story by Ollie Francis. To learn more, visit olliefrancis.co.uk, where you can discover how to support the project and influence where the story's going. Until then, may the gods always hear your song.